The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now it's time to return to the May 2022 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This will be the last reading for the month of May, then we'll close the cover and move on to June next week. We've been reading from the burger issue. And I think we're done with the burger topic, primarily. And this being the last reading of the month, we are going to go into the Decades article, which is the last one in every issue. And then, rather than try to find some more burger stuff or other things, we're going to go back to the beginning of the magazine and read all those things that are, you know, 2 or 3 minutes each and don't take very long, but they're interesting topics that we rarely get to cover. So let's get jumping with 1980s, the decade of local heroes. This month's topic is the Dreamweavers. In 1980s North Carolina, immigrants from Asia and around the world find refuge from war, freedom from persecution, and fresh opportunities. And in return, they weave new strands of art and culture into the tapestry of our state. Written, as always, by Philip Girard. And speaking of tapestries, we have somebody weaving a very colorful belt or something right here on the front. Lots of different color strings, and they're coming together in a pattern a third of the way into the image. The caption reads, "Immigrants who find their way to North Carolina contribute traditions that make our communities richer and stronger." The late H. Ju Nye, a Montagnard who settled in Greensboro, was celebrated for her backstrap weaving. War is the great disruptor of populations. Ruined by its devastation, traumatized by its violence, people take the biggest gamble of their lives. They leave home and strike out for the unknown, and with all of its opportunities and dangers. Some historians surmise that this sense of daring is the steel in America's backbone. North Carolina has a long tradition of receiving such immigrants, not just the war-weary, but also those seeking freedom from persecution or a better life for their children. The Waldenses, persecuted by the Catholic Church in their Alpine home, who established Valdese in Burke County. Jews escaping the horrors of World War II, who settled in the old Dutch farming community of Van Eden. Latin Americans, who became the essential workforce of the state's agricultural industries. Just before the fall of Saigon in April 1975, President Gerald Ford agreed to accept 125,000 refugees from Vietnam. By 1980, about 2,400 of them settled in North Carolina. And more arrive in a second wave, fishermen, merchants, and farmers. Among the newcomers are Highland people called Hmong, who migrated from southern China to Laos, Vietnam, Burma, and Thailand in the 1800s. During the Vietnam War, many fought in the so-called Secret Army, choking off the Ho Chi Minh Trail, a crucial supply route for North Vietnamese forces, and rescuing American flyers shot down over the jungle. Now they make their way overland from Laos through Thailand and then to the United States, and some 2,000 of them to North Carolina. The Montagnards from the central highlands of Vietnam consider themselves a separate nation. also staunch allies of the Americans. They suffer for their loyalty. As many as 200,000 of them die during the fighting, some 85% of their villages razed. The end of the war brought retribution from the Hanoi government, imprisonment for many, and the suppression of their culture. Montagnards, too, seek refuge in North Carolina. Before long, Greensboro has the largest Montagnard community in the world beyond Vietnam. One of them, Blick de Kat, languishes in a Thai refugee camp until an American relief organization offers him the prospect of resettlement in either California or North Carolina. He knows which state is home to his Green Beret comrades, and the forested Piedmont where he finds a new home is familiar terrain. So like the Central Highlands that during the Vietnam era, special forces trained in Randolph County before deployment. George Clark, a special forces veteran and member of the VFW post 1957 in Hickory, fought alongside some of the 60,000 Montagnard troops. The Montagnards were the best warriors in the world, he tells VFW magazine. They were so loyal through their courage, they gave us courage. The journey of immigration is often long and dangerous. Refugees can wait for months or even years in a transient camp before being offered safe passage to the U.S. Thomas Y. Chler Iban, an interpreter for U.S. Special Forces, treks across Cambodia to Thailand and finds refuge in Greensboro in 1956. But it is 7 years before he is reunited with his wife, H. Ju Nui. Shortly thereafter, two other Montagnards complete the journey when Y. Luan Puy is released from prison in Vietnam. He and his wife, N. Nigach Rallin, move to the U.S. and join the Greensboro community. Ni and Rallin practice the art of backstrap weaving. They create exquisite blankets, shirts, baby carriers, and vibrant, colorful clothing crafted to be worn on ceremonial or celebratory occasions. Ni was tutored in weaving from the age of 15 by her mother and other women in the city of Ban Ma Thuat. Her intricate geometric patterns depict images of the natural world, like reptiles and birds, as well as emblems of struggle, like rifles and airplanes. Rollin's specialty is described by the North Carolina Arts Council as a now-rare twining technique called keteh, K-T-E-H, used as a border for a rade man's shirt or a jerai woman's skirt. These Montagnard women and others enrich their new community and preserve a cultural legacy that is becoming rare in their homeland, the chain of tradition broken by war, persecution, and flight of refugees. Ni and Rallin earn recognition in the form of the North Carolina Heritage Award, the state's highest honor for traditional artists. Newcomers also bring economic value to the larger community as entrepreneurs. At age 14, Sai Kam, a Laotian, receives an offer from his uncle who had immigrated to Charlotte. Kam relates his story to the North Carolina Justice Center. He asked me, "Do you want to come to America?" I said, "If you can bring me, I will come." Kam is excited but naive. "I think America is just like in the movies," he recounts. "They're going to have everything for you." He gives away almost everything he owns, keeping only the clothes on his back and an English dictionary. He comes to Charlotte in August 1987. After 3 months, he drops out of school to work and soon opens a restaurant, Po Daravan, offering Thai and Laotian cuisine. The hours are long, but he enjoys the freedom. "You work hard, but nobody could tell you what time you have to be there." He continues, "War and war and war. I hate that. I've been through that when I was a kid, you know? That's why I come over here. You are living in a good land." Kam operates Pho Daravan until a few years before his death in 2019. Charlotte, the Triad, and the Triangle emerge as gateways for immigrants. Beginning in 1980, and spanning the next two decades, they collectively increased their foreign-born newcomer population by an average of 600% or more. By 1990, thousands of newcomers from Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, and Laos call North Carolina home, along with a fast-growing community of Indian Americans. Sheetal Desai's journey of immigration lasts for 12 years. Her parents left India in 1971 for Zambia, a stepping stone to the U.S. The idea was always to move to the West because my father wanted a better life for us, Desai says. She was born and grew up in Zambia, then moved with her family to St. Lucia and Barbados. We were in Barbados when we got the call for our green card, she says. Her family first moves to Chile, Massachusetts. We lasted 10 months and we were miserable, she recounts. A family friend from North Carolina invites us to visit. Flying over, I see all the trees and I'm thinking to myself, yes, this is my place. She settles in Durham, then marries a native North Carolinian of Indian descent and becomes Sheetal Desai Maheshwari. That's when I really felt, this is home. I'm home, she says. Before that, I was trying to straddle the two cultures. So him having been brought up here kind of helped me find my place. With a degree in mass communications from NC State, she eventually lands a position as project coordinator for a clinical supplies company. I love it. This is the closest I will ever get to helping a patient without having a medical degree, she says. What I do directly affects a cancer patient, a child with leukemia. I like knowing that what I'm doing is making a difference to someone. She offers this advice for newcomers. Set aside any preconceived notions that you may have had. Wipe your slate clean and just absorb everyone around you. This country has so much to give, so much freedom, so much acceptance, especially here in North Carolina. Like generations before them, these immigrants weave themselves into their new communities, making them stronger and more vibrant, contributing their arts and traditions, their ingenuity and ambition, their hard work, and their loyalty to their adopted home. Next month, saving the birds of the North Carolina coast. And now we're going to go to page 24. This is part of an article called The To-Do List for May. And we will continue just reading from there all of these miscellaneous short articles up in the front of the magazine, which is so interesting. At the market, beets. It's a picture of a man here holding up four gigantic beets. I mean, they are bigger than his fist, and they're gorgeous looking. One of the state's first spring crops to sprout, beets help us welcome warm weather and fresh produce once again. We asked Richard Majestic of Majestic Family Farm in East Bend all about the growing process and how we can make the most out of these vibrant root vegetables. Question, where do you plant and harvest the beets? Majestic, I plant them in the middle of March in my greenhouse, and I pick them around the middle to the end of May. Toward the end of May through July is the best time to get them at the farmer's market. When folks head to the farmer's market for beets, what should they look for? You want the beets to be nice and firm, and make sure there are no rotten spots. At the beginning of the season, everyone is looking at the greens because you can eat them, either cook them like spinach or enjoy them raw. How do you incorporate beets into your meals? We eat them raw by grating them up finely and adding them to a salad. I pickle them, too. They're good roasted with carrots, potatoes, and onions. There are lots of ways to prepare them, and raw beets are a great, healthy addition to your meals. Majestic Family Farm sells sustainably grown products at the Clemens Farmers Market every Saturday from May to October, and the Clemens Farmers Market is at the Jerry Long Family YMCA on South Peace Haven Road in Clemens, and they have an lib address, which is too long to read. Now we're going into a section which says Locals Guide, Bryson City. In this small town, it's easy to love where you live. Outdoor activities, tasty dishes, and colorful shops, all aboard to Swain County. Written by Katie King. Picture of a train on a trestle over a river. Passengers who board the Great Smoky Mountains Railroad for the four-hour Tuskegee River excursion pass by the set of the 1933 action movie The Fugitive. The Locals Guide, Bryson City, Gianna Carson has degrees in marine biology and teaching, but as she moves around her Bryson City bakery greeting customers and pulling cookies and pastries from the glass case, there's no question that she's where she's meant to be. She'd always wanted to own her own business, and after teaching 8th grade science for 10 years, she finally took the leap. Simple, spacious, and comfortable, La Dolce Vita buzzes with activity as tourists coming off the Great Smoky Mountains Railroad stop by for nitro-cold brews and huge salads. Regulars come in, too, some once a week, some twice a day, to fill up on coffee and homemade bagels. When you put something out there, it's like exposing yourself, Carson says. The fact that people even want to come in once a week for something, it's neat to watch that. Carson and her staff have built a community at La Dolce Vita, a feeling that extends beyond the front doors to other merchants nearby. It's an eclectic mountain town where you can come and see life as usual, Carson says. You're seeing not a resort community, but a community for Southern Appalachian families. You can eat at the High Test Deli and Sweet Shop. Locals still call this popular deli the Filling Station, the Filling Station, its original name. That's how you know if you're talking to someone who is from here or not, Carson says. For a special treat, she and her kids order ice cream sandwiches on homemade cookies with creative flavor combinations like green apple ice cream between salted caramel cookies. Or you can eat at Mountain Perks. This coffee shop has been a Bryson City Gatherings place for more than 20 years. Since opening, it has expanded both in size and in menu options, which now include homemade soups, quiches, salads, bagels, a large selection of gluten-free and vegetarian options, and wraps, Carson's favorite. Or you can eat at Anthony's Restaurant. Carson and her family love to eat at this long-standing Italian restaurant, which opened in 1990. They have really good pizza, she says, plus traditional Italian pasta dishes and other fare made using family recipes. And for dessert, cheesecakes from La Dolce Vita. They wanted to offer something local, so I appreciate that about them, Carson says. If you want to stay someplace, then try the Everett Hotel and Bistro. Stay in the heart of this historic district at the Everett Hotel and Bistro. Located inside the 1905 Bryson City Bank building, guests can enjoy an exclusive rooftop patio, and anyone can dine at the on-site restaurant, a rustic space that serves contemporary American dishes made using as many organic, local, seasonal, and sustainable ingredients as possible. You can drink at Mountain Layers Brewing Company. This brewery rooftop patio overlooks the Tuskegee River and Everett Street and often has live music performances. Their beers are made with water from the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and many other local ingredients. We've roasted coriander and many other things in our ovens for them to make beer with, Carson says. And Humanité. Carson's good friend, Aaron Smith, owns this modern and affordable clothing, home, and gift boutique. I have zero sense of style, she has all the sense of Aaron. Aaron, find things for me and call me and I'll come buy them. A portion of the proceeds are donated to local charities, including the Giving Spoon, which provides free meals to help reduce hunger in Swain County. The Loose Moose. This colorful, eclectic store is the ultimate place to find Bryson City souvenirs. In front of the shop, walls and shelves are covered with T-shirts, Bryson City souvenir shirts on the left, quirky, laugh-out-loud joke shirts on the right. In the back, find tons of home decor perfect for a mountain cabin. Or you can shop at 120 Main. Owner Ashley Hackshaw is the most talented painter I know, and I'm not saying that because she's my friend, Carson says. Inside Hackshaw's store, she has books and other things that you can get for gifts. She works on her art while she's there and has it posted for sale. It's very authentically her. How about play in Bryson City? Bryson City Outdoors. This outfitter has everything from hiking boots, rain jackets, and T-shirts to camp stoves and water bottles. If we're going to go overnight backpacking, we don't have to go all the way to Walmart now to get little packets of food, Carson says. A small tap room with regional beers spills out onto the front patio, and there's often a food truck parked out front. Tuska CG Fly Shop. Owners Bobby Bennett and Dale Collins offer guided fly fishing trips, plus flies, rods, waders, and all the gear needed to get out into the river and streams of Jackson, Haywood, and Swain counties. Bennett and Collins have a podcast, too, the Tuck Cast, with a splash of bourbon, which is funny, Carson says. And there's a picture here of railway car. A little boy's looking out an open window. It says, Great Smoky Mountains Railroad. Two routes take visitors on a train ride to the Nantahala Gorge or along the Tuskegee River on trips ranging from a few hours to all day. For adults, it's a slower pace scenic ride, and they love it. Carson says, for little kids, they do themed excursions like the Polar Express. My kids really liked that. If you want to learn more, you can go to ourstate.com/downtown-Bryson-City. And Overleaf, welcome home, May's Mother's Day. The golden thistle design in Blowing Rock. Having spent time in flower-filled Greek Orthodox churches and in a garden that she planted with sweet alyssum in third grade, Hannah Hunt knows her blossoms. When an event planner convinced her to open Golden Thistle Design, a wedding floral business, Hannah asked her daughter Erin to assist by counting candlesticks until, by osmosis, Erin learned that hand me that pink flower meant a peony. Hannah says, 4 years later, this mother-daughter team fashions lush, loose floral creations for couples who choose to marry in the North Carolina mountains. The duo's current look features dusty hues of caramel, mauve, cream, and blush. But mother and daughter look best alive. Erin's daughter, Emma, could wire an orchid by age 3. Now 5, she has very expensive tastes, Hannah says, and prefers anthurium for her bouquets. To learn more about Golden Thistle Design, visit goldenthistledesign.com. Rugged Renewal Antiques in Graham. Vintage-style chandeliers light the way for Lindsay Russell and her mother, Deborah DeHart. As they walk down the aisles of their Alamance County store, Rugged Renewals Antiques, Russell is right on her mother's heels, just like she was as a little girl when the pair went antiquing together. Hunting for old treasures has always been Russell and DeHart's favorite way to spend time together. In 2017, when they found a decades-old Esso gas station that once served drivers traveling on North Carolina Highway 87 South in Graham, they decided to start their own antique shop. The station was full of potential. The original doors, signs, and windows were all intact. From stencil painting the gray and white floors of the store to transforming the adjacent garage in a welcoming space where people could shop for vintage furniture, home decor, soap, and jewelry made by DeHart's daughter-in-law. The renovation of the 1,200-square-foot structure was what they both expected, a lot of greasy, hard work. Renovating the shop and running it together has taught the duo a lot about each other, Russell says. There's nothing better than working with someone you love. They're on 6027 North Carolina Highway 87 South in Graham. They're on Facebook as Rugged Renewal. And now, Mothers and Strangers, Essays on Motherhood from the New South. Many of us think we know our mothers, but how well do we really know the women who brought us into the world? In this brilliant and thought-provoking collection of essays compiled by Samia, Sarah Geldin, and Lee Smith, 28 writers challenged themselves to discover who their mothers truly were, not only as parents, but also as people and products of their time and circumstance. The idea for this collection was born during a lunch between Sarah Geldin, Smith, and contributor Margaret Rich, shortly after the deaths of Sarah Geldin's and Rich's mothers. one a powerful and aristocratic Egyptian mother, and the other a strong-willed southern matriarch. Friends quickly jumped on board to contribute because somehow we have come to that time in our lives when all the parents are gone, Smith writes. Who are we now without her? Each writer came up with answers as unique as the women themselves. Raleigh-based writer Elaine Neal Orr shares that her mother, a Southern Baptist missionary, composed herself like a queen on their long drives when her family lived in Nigeria. Hillsborough-based writer Jill McCorkle marvels at the long hours her mother worked as a secretary for more than 30 years, noting that she never felt slighted, at least. The idea of a typical Southern mother quickly disappears as we read about the heartaches, joys, and struggles of these diverse women. As Sarah Gelden writes, our contributors discovered much about their mothers, but perhaps even more about themselves. Welcome Home Mother's Day continues. 10 Mothers Farm in Cedar Grove. The busiest spot in 10 Mothers Farm has to be the Habitat Garden, the 600-square-foot hedgerow of Joe Pye weed, elderberry, and mountain mint, among other native plants sown to attract pollinators, absolutely hums with life. Brilliant bluebirds, muted yellow wasps, and beetles of every description. It's a wild reminder of the ethos that animates the farm, which was founded in Orange County 6 years ago by Vera Fabian and Gordon Jenkins to feed people while maintaining some measure of environmental harmony. We aspire to make a farm a thriving ecosystem, says Fabian, who spent years training for the effort with Jenkins. They met while she was working at a green schoolyard and he at a farm-to-table restaurant. Together they apprenticed at Eco-Minded Farm in California, Maine, and North Carolina. Today, 10 Mothers employs six-year-round living wage farmers in Cedar Grove in an intensive multi-crop minimal till operation that feeds 240 families via a CSA. Its moniker borrows from an old, possibly a cryptic old saying from India that garlic is as good as 10 mothers if you're feeling under the weather. The idea is that food is medicine, nourishment, and comfort, Fabian says. As she, Jenkins, and their team hurry about the farm's grand hoop house, preparing boxes for the afternoon CSA deliveries to Durham, Chapel Hill, and Hillsborough, the pair are grateful for their farm's growth and their family's growth. This year, the couple welcomed their first child, Cal. This farm has felt like our child, says Fabian, who wonders if the patience, adaptability, and endurance that the farm has taught them will translate to the task of child rearing. Hopefully, it will also be a fun place to grow up. They're on Auburn Lane in Cedar Grove. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this magazine is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, and on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.